Congo's eastern neighbor, Kenya, has its own unique history and culture. But Kenyan writer Binyavanga Wainaina says you might never know that from the way the African continent is depicted in newspapers and magazines. He pointed this out in an essay in 2005. It was called How to Write About Africa. Mr. Wainaina, with tongue firmly in cheek, advised writers to employ all the hackneyed stereotypes of Africa. Quote, "It is hot and dusty with rolling grasslands and huge herds of animals and tall, thin people who are starving. Or it is hot and steamy with very short people who eat primates. Don't get bogged down with precise descriptions." These days, Binyavanga Wainaina directs the Chinua Achebe Center for African Writers and Artists at Bard College. His first book is out now. It's a memoir. Right now, he's in Kenya and speaking to us from Nairobi. Binyavanga, in your memoir titled One Day I Will Write About This Place, you characterize yourself as kind of a dreamy kid, even within your own family. It sounds like you were the one with the nose always buried in a book. What did you notice about the world around you?
I was very much the dreamy kind of kid. I'd say, more than anything else, I was always confused about why everybody seemed to know what was going on. I was a bit offline or a bit off kilter. And I think I processed the world through books. So I made sense of even the things around me through the frame of books. Rather than, I know people say writers are supposed to be great observers, I don't think I was a good observer. I was a good observer of people through books.
And obviously, because you were immersed in books, language was and still is important to you, obviously. You read a lot and you were fascinated by words. Do you remember some of the ones that you really liked? I mean, you even made some up, too.
Yeah, there's a word called kime, which kind of just came. It was a word that referred in my head when I was a kid to things that were shaky. And it could be jazz. It could be all the different tribes. Because in Kenya, when you have a tribe, it's usually called ki something or of something, the Kikuyu, the, you know. So I had this language called kime. And it meant many things, like I hated accordion sound. So that was a kime sound. Mm-hmm. A kime sound was Jimi Hendrix playing the guitar, which was all upside down and shaky and scary. And kime was also all these tribes of people speaking these different languages, meeting in English and Kiswahili in this new country where nobody really knows each other and people are just figuring each other's out. And always, you're always sitting in one place listening to many languages around you and uncertain about your place among them.
I mean, it's telling that you say people were still trying to figure each other out. And this is when you're growing up. It's 20 years after independence or so. Give us a sense of this era you grew up in Kenya.
So, I mean, this was the 70s. I mean, in some senses, Kenya's economy was booming, had boomed nonstop from 1963 until the mid-80s. For so many people, they were the first generation in school. Sometimes their parents were the first generation in school. In my case, it was the latter. Schools were cheap. They were building schools all over the country. They were building electricity, roads, and everything else. It seemed like a gorgeous place. Of course, there were huge amounts of tensions. It wasn't a democracy yet. There were all these other things going on. But it was a time of a kind of resurgence, you know. And so I tend to look on my childhood as a wonderful one. And in the book, you see that later in my teens, as the Cold War ends and the new culture of humanitarianism, which I kind of refer to as a sort of way to flatten us back and tell us our project was stupid and we need to be taken care of by white people all over the world and Bono and somebody. You know, for us, it was a very painful thing to witness ourselves on We Are the World.
Why?
And We Are the World wasn't just saying there's this drought. It was saying the project is over. The project of independence, the project of doing things yourself. Suddenly there's a guy who's the king of Africa and he's a rock musician. So we're sitting here watching people crying over us. There was a drought in Kenya, but there wasn't that much in the way of starvation. It was all about Ethiopia. The songs just didn't stop saying Ethiopia. They said Africa. I've come to believe that that moment was a kind of a certain victory of not just capitalism, but victory of humanitarianism. It was this kind of idea of putting you in your place, a kind of pity and compassion. We sit here and watch people arrive and say, we are coming to save you. We see 16-year-old American kids coming to teach grown men how to use a condom as if that couldn't happen. But you wonder why the cost of that ticket from America and everything else, why so expensive for so little?
Do you think there's an alternative, though, to this kind of humanitarian activity?
I guess there's something between the distinction between the interventions of global citizens to crises that affect their lives, you know, emergencies, global emergencies. If you look at the landscape of what that game is in Kenya, it long ago passed the point at which it was like, we don't just want to come in. Now you've got people taking over education systems of whole districts. And I'm actually, like many Africans, starting to wish that some of these things start to get regulated. The sheer amount of numbers, the sheer amount of passive weight carried by what we call the donor humanitarian world right now has gone mad.
Writer Binyavanga Wainaina directs the Chinua Achebe Center for African Writers and Artists at Bard College. His new book is a memoir called One Day I Will Write About This Place. Binyavanga, great to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marco.